Mitch Batras with us. We're going to be back with Mitch in a moment and take your phone calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. We'll take your phone calls in a moment here with Mitch Batras, earthchangesmedia.com. In all the years, Mitch, that you've been doing this, of course, your couple books, Global Warming, A Convenient Disguise, Solar Rain, and the new one coming out next year, which you don't know about new scientific findings. Anything that ever shocked you that you came across in your research?
Yes. I would say the very beginning with Solar Rain. When I was doing my research, I started with NOAA because I was, it was 1989.
You were with NOAA? You mean, did he bring you on the ark or what?
I'm sorry. No.
I didn't think you were that old. I've always wanted to say that.
Okay. No, it was actually 1997, 98, it was a bad, what they called a bad El Nino year. And then it went on into La Nina. And it tickled me. I said, you know, that what happened to El Nino? We went from El Nino, now you call it La Nina. What about El Cucaracha? So I did. I contacted NOAA. I'd already started the show, Earth Changes TV, at the time. And I contacted NOAA, letting him know I'm writing a book, and I want to know about this El Nino thing. And they started to explain about the Southern Pacific Oscillation and how that happens and through these ocean currents. And I said, you know, a stunning question. I said, hey, what causes that? Well, you know, the atmosphere, you know, this is something that, well, what can you tell me about that? They said, I'm sorry, we have to contact NASA. And that really threw me back. I started to learn a bit about the sun. And I wanted to see some correlation, and there was none. I don't even think they had a space weather center at the time, NOAA. And so I had to go to NASA to find out, well, gee, the NOAA guys over here tell me about the ocean current and atmospheric conditions. What about above atmosphere? Is there anything in the space that's happening? Well, that they told me about the solar flares and, you know, the sun's activity, and that seems to have an influence on the magnetic field. They explain the magnetic field and so forth. And I was shocked to find that the left hand didn't know what the right hand was doing. And I am as serious as a heart attack about this. I could not believe it. I could not believe that NOAA, at the time, they breached that in very much since then. Hmm. But at the time, NOAA really did not know what NASA was doing. NASA didn't know what NOAA was doing.
That was almost every department of government, you know?
Well, that could be true. I haven't experienced all of them, but that was enough. And so what I did was... you know, put the puzzle together, and lo and behold, you know, after they, whoever realized that these two departments better start getting together, I guess it happened sometime around 2002, 2003, that the Air Force got involved, and now the Air Force is working closely with NOAA, and of course NOAA and the Air Force work closely with NASA now. So there is more of a seamless connection. But at the time, there was none. They really could not explain to me what was happening in space, if it had any correlation with what was happening on Earth and other planets for that matter. And I put all that together, and that was my shocking moment. I have not experienced that since, and I haven't experienced it since I started to do my research on the galaxy, on our Milky Way and the sun connection. Well, there was, I wouldn't call it a shock. There have been some surprises, but then again, it was a surprise to everybody. What's happening on the sun and these solar flares are unlike what happened in cycle 23. I think I mentioned already in the show, these kind of moderate solar flares are having the strength of these X-class flares. And they've been documented by NASA, and they've supported much of my writing. They don't know the exact cause. They think it's external, but the latest thing was this July 23rd, that it was an M4 or maybe an M5 class flare, and they were shocked at the speed, and they should be, because an average speed of a CME, of a coronal mass ejection, is about 400 kilometers per second. This one was 1,800 kilometers per second. That much of a difference. That is huge, huge. And they just couldn't understand how that could come from an M-class flare. Well, since then, they've learned about filaments and how a filament, can, especially if it's close to a sunspot region, there's some connection there. Mm-hmm. And during the time of a filament, by the way, there's a large filament occurring on the southern part of the sun now. If you look to the south, east is west. By the way, when you look at the sun, whenever I put photos of the sun up, east is west and west is east. I know it drives you crazy. But when I tell you it's going around the western limb, raise your right hand. It's going around the right. And solar flares that, and then it circulates counterclockwise, and it comes back around and comes around on your from your left arm. But that's called the eastern limb. Very confusing. But this filament, if for those of you that, if you go to Earth Changes Media, I have a photo up there.
So that can increase the outcome of the flare.
Well, that's right. That's part of what's going on. The other part, of course, is the lessening of the magnetic field, and they're kind of still scratching their heads of what this is. And matter of fact, NASA, I guess it was 2 months ago, put out a report or announcement, really, almost like a notice, that they're channeling their funds to study these charged particles. They're really quite concerned about what's happening.
Let's take some calls here, Mitch, for you. We'll go first of all to Jerry in Lima, Ohio, east of the Rockies. Hi, Jerry, go ahead.
Hey, in that movie, when we got hit by a major flare from the sun and it turned the Earth into a moon, what is the possibility of that?
Yep, and that was the Nicolas Cage movie. Can flares cause that kind of problem? Fires?
I did see that movie, and there's no evidence that would suggest that there's been that type of extinction. No scientific data. And going back, you know, millions of years, you know, has shown such a thing. We know of it was either an asteroid, which was most likely 65 million years ago, or it was volcanoes. George, you did ask the question, was there ever a time when everything went off
at the same time? Yeah.
Well, yes, it was at that time, 65 million years ago, that occurred. Nobody knows exactly what happened. I tend to lean towards the asteroid scenario, but it could have been something else. You know, the dinosaurs died. All living things died at that time. But it wasn't like what we saw in the movie Knowing.
Okay, next up we go to Steve in Reseda, California, west of the Rockies. Steve, thanks for calling.
Hi, George.
Hello there.
Hi, Mitch.
Hello.
I've got a question. First, I've got a quick observation. I'm a fisherman and a diver. My dad was, too, and I heard all kinds of stories. I think this started up in the 80s. That was when we were fishing off the Channel Islands here off California, and the yellowfin tuna started hitting and the skipjack, and we were catching these mantis shrimp. And then I was diving in the early 90s in the abalone. You could just watch them. They were losing their footing. And they came up with this foot blight thing, but you know the abalone are really a great species to study because they really need a specific water temperature. They only live in a very small temperate area. But my question is, do you think that our government maybe knows about this stuff, and that's why we're having all this geoengineering?
Well, you know, I've discussed this with Nick Begich on the HARP thing. I agree with him. There is that technology, and it's the technology has been really since the late 50s as far as weather manipulation. But neither one of us believe that there's some sinister plot going on. Actually, I think you might have been alluding to the idea that something like that could be occurring to help us. Now, I would lean more towards that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they may not be disclosing everything, but it's really hard to keep secrets, you know, especially when it comes to astronomy. There are thousands of amateur astronomers around the world who have telescopes strong enough that there's really nothing that would be of any immediate or moderate danger, say within a year to 10 years, that they wouldn't see.
They'd find it, and they'd let us know, especially with the social networking going on.
Well, absolutely. And there's no way that these guys are nonconformist rebels, at times as much as I can be when need be. And they're just not going to suppress. They're not going to... Nothing's going to scare us.
Well, what about the things, Mitch, that they don't see until after the fact? I mean, how many times have we heard stories of an asteroid came close to Earth, but it passed right by, but they never even knew it was around until it had already gone by?
Yes, that happens. There are these blind spots. Most of it is from the South Pole that comes from that angle. It's really dark, especially a dark asteroid. All of them have been small. But nonetheless, it is kind of spooky. But having said that, what you said is true, George. But also what's true is that it's amateur astronomers who find 90% of the asteroids and comets.
90%?
Yes, 9. Maybe NASA's chiseled away a little bit on that. The reason why is they were focusing only on the great big guys, at least 1 mile across, if not larger. But the amateur astronomers were finding and logging. That's why so many comets and asteroids have funny names, because the people who find it, usually they use their last name. When they give it to them.
Let's go to James driving in Kentucky. You're on with Mitch Batras on Coast to Coast. James, go ahead.
Hey, good morning, fellas.
Morning.
A little earlier, you mentioned the work of Greg Braden. I read the Isaiah effect, and I understand how that works. And you mentioned that a million people would do a lot better than 1,000. I want to reflect back to the late 90s when Art Bell was doing those experiments. I know Richard Hoagland and Daniel Brinkley can both testify to the fact that when people get together and try to make a change or make an effect, it works real well. And the way Art did it was he would spend the first couple of hours talking about the whatever we wanted to change, whether it might be weather or a healing or something, and get everybody's mind into what it was. And then he would say, during the break, let's all concentrate on this, pray if you pray, or whatever you do. And 7 times out of 7 experiments, it was a success.
Yeah, they worked. But he abruptly stopped, James, because something went awry. I think something scared him, the way it was working.
Well, I think what it was that he was, like if you change the direction of a hurricane or something, suppose it causes something to happen that wasn't in the plan, and it makes a bigger mess than what it would have been to begin with.
Precisely.
And that's why he did. But, you can pick and choose what you want to do it about. George, you got the perfect audience that would be able to make an effect. Now, if it's something that's just plain positive, like a conscious change with people where we could improve the planet, I mean, you can make it happen. I think.
I agree. Go ahead, Mitch.
You know what's scary about that, George? If that's true, wouldn't it also be true if those that meant harm to us also had that power?
They could do that. There's no doubt about it.
Exactly. So there has to be something in between there, and maybe that's one's personal will, that we're not total victims of fate, and that we all are empowered, really, to have a choice. Even if a mass thing, and I'm familiar with it. Matter of fact, George, I think you've done that a few times.
Yes.
But you're very cautious with it, and because you never know of unintended consequences. That's the scary part. But you've never, in all the ones that you have done, George, is, there really wasn't any bad side to it. So I think if you're really careful. However, that's still if you're looking at a world change or even a more local change, I still believe it's the critical mass that if it would have if there were a million people against something and 500,000 for something, the million's going to win every time. However, if you get that 500,000 to change their mind or consciousness, and it reaches that million and one, then you're at the time of critical mass, and that's when the shift can occur.
What about Yellowstone, the caldera, Mitch? Do you take a look at that, and what's happening there?
Yes, I do. It's been relatively calm lately. I can't say the same for Italy. For some reason, they've become quite concerned about the area where Pompeii was. I guess that'd be Etna, but it's a caldera near Etna that was as big as Yellowstone, and they're realizing that many parts of Italy and Sicily really have no place to go, and that's what they were talking about. They were talking about not allowing construction or inhabitants in certain areas, and there were some zones that people were already living, and they were kind of realizing that, it's most likely going to be a gradual thing, and that we'll have the signs before it happens. It's not like an earthquake. We'll see some telltale signs, one of which are earthquakes, smaller earthquakes, what's called earthquake swarms, and then they gradually get larger, and as soon as it hits a 4.0, or 4.0 and larger, that's when they put out the strong alerts and start evacuation. I think all the volcanoes really are in play. I think there's a mantle plume under these calderas. I think it's a mantle plume that's under Yellowstone. There's a mantle plume under Hawaii, a mantle plume under Iceland. The Himalayas, for that matter, that is what grows mountains. And when it's submerged, when it's undersea, what's called submarine volcanoes, that's islands. And we're watching an island being, building itself right now off the coast of New Zealand. That's what occurred. I think it was in May, where they found that 10,000 square miles of lava, and it came from an area. Where there's several undersea volcanoes.
All right, Mitch, we're going to come back in just a moment and take final phone calls with you. Mitch Batras, our guest, earthchangesmedia.com. His book's out there, Solar Rain, Global Warming, A Convenient Disguise, and sometime next year, What You Don't Know About New Scientific Findings. Next year, of course, is right around the corner. Well, next hour, Confessions of a Regressionist. Make sure you're part of that program. And when we come back with Mitch Batras, let's take final phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast with Mitch Batras, of course, your final phone calls as well. Mitch, as you look at all the weather changes that have been going on, I got into a discussion with someone about the shrinking glaciers. But a lot of people think they're growing. So where do you stand on that?
I think it's both. The question is it unusual? Has the Earth seen it before, and what's the cause? No, and no. No, it's not unusual. The Earth has seen it many times before. It happens much faster than they originally thought. And the major cause is the sun. They're experiencing global warming and Mars, Mercury, Pluto, all the planets, and that's just our solar system. That's not to say related to global warming. In my book, Global Warming: A Convenient Disguise, I probably focus a little bit more on politics of it, although all the science is there. And really, it's unfortunate that they chose to make the fight the way they did, and I kind of blame Al Gore for that. If they would have come out with, hey, look, the Earth is warming, for various reasons, How should we prepare? You know, what kind of things can we do? But instead, they did it kind of in the fashion of a Iraq war. You're either with me or you're against me way. And they got the environmentalists involved, but really they kind of tricked them. And with the true environmentalists that I've spoken to, really feel betrayed, and that's real unfortunate. I'd say the biggest victim in all that is the true environmentalists themselves. So yes, the glaciers are melting and they're growing, but the seas aren't rising like you hear so often to a degree and so fast in a way that land mass will be lost. However, in the IPCC report, that's something I agree with them, that there very well could be some form of mass migration during this trend. But like you say, George, it's a cycle, I'm surprised that people are surprised that such a cycle is happening, and that's why I'm quite convinced that it's political, it's about money. President Obama has been very careful with this. He knows not to push it, what he has been pushing, which I do agree with, is the technology. We should improve our technology. We can really help the environment. We can be more efficient, absolutely. And as far as industry, I think it is the new thing. Whether it be solar panels or new forms of energy, I'm all for that. But don't tinkle on me and tell me it's raining. You know, that kind of thing. I think that upsets a lot of people.
Let's go to Dave Ketchikan, Alaska. Hey, Dave, thanks for calling. You're up.
Oh, hello, Mitch. I've been enjoying your articles now for a few years. George, it's great to be here. I've Coast Insider, and
thank you, David.
Been listening since the. I feel privileged to say, since the mid-80s. And what I have is a scenario for Mitch, and I'd like to have your thoughts on it. Now, we are coming up on the galactic alignment, you know, like the Maya were saying. Now, if the center of our galaxy is a large magnet, I mean, gravity all works like a magnet, and it were... maybe a north coming outward, southward to the center, as we come across and we all line up, would it have a tendency to pull all the southern poles, the planets, the suns, everything towards that center black hole? And then as we pass through, would it have a tendency to flip?
Kind of yes and kind of no. There's a whole bunch missing from that analogy. I think I kind of understand what you're talking about in principle. It's something that makes sense, but I don't know if it's practical. There's so many variances that have been left out that would play a part. But I mean, in a general sense, there's something to what you're saying, and you're right. At the center of every galaxy is a black hole, and you could make the analogy that a black hole is like a big magnet, because what we're finding out is this thing we call dark matter, dark energy, that is charged particles. That's exactly what it is. They didn't know that before. That's always been a question mark. This is new stuff. This is all in the book too, but. This is just months old. We didn't have the technology or the spacecraft to know of such things before this time. I mean, this is the time we're in is astounding in the scientific community. It's so fast, literally so fast, that they're very concerned that they cannot assimilate the information that they're getting because it's just too much, and they're really quite concerned. They've already rewritten the science books, the general platforms. But now they're having to rewrite it again. It's so happening so fast. It's a very interesting time.
Okay, let's go more to Sarah now in Seattle, Washington. Sarah, welcome to the program.
Hello. So my question is, first I'm going to say this. Like, when a storm rolls in the middle of the night, I feel charged, like I can't sleep. And it'll start raining at night, and I'll have trouble sleeping, typically the first storm of the year up here in Seattle. And I know that, like, there are psychological effects up here from the overcast or whatever, but I'm curious if they know anything about psychological effects of, say, shifts in magnetic poles in more charged particles in the atmosphere, what the effects that has on the physical body and the psychological effects, if there's been studies about that.
I'm not sure about the studies, Mitch, but we've talked about that tonight, of course, and I think it could play a role.
It does play a role. I'm a Seattleite, so she's talking about seasonal affective disorder because it is overcast all the time. The best postcard I've ever seen was a postcard of Seattle, and it had four shades of gray. I guess that's an inside joke. yes, your assumption is correct, but the thing that, you know, when you know a storm is coming, or just before or just after a storm, that goes back to what I mentioned about my grandmother. There's a scientific analogy to that. There's you know, some strong data. It's a barometric pressure, or atmospheric pressure. So there's something tangible that's actually happening, and our body picks up on that. Also, what I said was, over the years, you know, since Microsoft up there in Seattle, you know, I think we've been dumbed down a bit, and our senses have been dulled. And I don't know if there's as many people that are as attuned to these kind of events that once were.
All right, let's take some more calls here. We'll go to Houghton, Michigan. Dave, first-time caller. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Hi, George.
Good to have you with us.
I got a little different view of that pole shift business. I think because we're pumping out the Earth's ballast, we all know what happens to a large ship when you lose its ballast. It's
down it goes
by outside forces. And we're pumping at how many years now? A barrel of oil weighs about a quarter of a ton, and we're pumping out millions of barrels a day around the globe at pumping sites all over. And I think that has a big effect on our pole shift. And I also think it's affecting the keeping down the heat and tremendous pressure from the center core of the Earth, because it acts as a barrier.
All right, what do you think of that possibility,
well,
Mitch?
Actually, he's on to something. I don't agree about the oil, which I believe in abiotic oil, which an article just came out today, George. I'll get it out to you as soon as I can, about support about abiotic oil. What they found in another galaxy was an enormous amount of a petroleum compound, and that's where this stuff comes from. Earth is made up carbonite and magnesium and all the stuff that makes oil. So I think the Earth continues to make it. Now, what he said that is correct is that the Earth. What's happening now? What happened in the past with the last pole shift, and perhaps even what's called a true wanderer? A true wanderer is crustal displacement. A true wanderer is Canada in the south of the equator. That has many believe, and they've shown. I mean, these are in the scientific journals. Evidence that suggests that this has happened before. They don't say exactly when, but it was a long time, maybe a million years. I can't remember what the data said. But this thing called a true wanderer is where there's a bulge occurs in the Earth around the the equator. And that seems to be what's happening now, is that a bulge occurs. There's an imbalance of liquid core, and when the core is trying to compensate, when it gets overheated and tries to compensate by cooling, the mantle plumes are formed, and then there's crustal displacement, and a bulge occurs. And in the past, what the documents say is, in order to right itself, the Earth did make an actual tangible a shift, where not just a magnetic shift, but an actual shift to gain balance again. I kind of think there, I think that's true. I think there was what's called a true wander that's happened before. I guess that answers your one question. Has it happened before, where everything happened at once? Well, I think everything would probably happen at once if that occurred.
And you're a believer, Mitch, in cycles, aren't you?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And you know, it is amazing at how accurate these cycles are time-wise.
Well, that's why I've turned to studying ancient text, and specifically the Mayans. I think the Mayans were right on. They were incredible astronomers. And I remember we had this discussion once before, George, and the question was, how did the Mayans get such information? And I told you there's only two ways it could happen. One is that there were, you know, some alien celestial thing.
Right.
Deal. And the other is that they're much older than we thought. And evidence is coming out of just that, that, you know, when the continents were joined, that there was travel from the Middle East, you know, Egypt, and Mesopotamia, Mesoamerica. So I believe it's just that they're finding skeletons, that human skeletons, knowledgeable, cultured, they believe to be humans, the collective of a community, that dates back hundreds of thousands of years. So I think that how they gained such knowledge was that they're not you know, 3,000 years old or 2,000 years old. I think they're 30,000 years old or more.
And the technology they must have possessed might have been much more than we thought they had.
That I'm going to put in my gray box. That I don't know. I mean, it could happen. I think that the information they gathered just over the decades and centuries that was just passed down, and that, you know, most of us don't live long enough or pass the information down, you know, only the last 120 years, generally, maybe 200 years. We're talking about people who've passed down information for 30,000 years. I think they lived through the cycles. I don't mean that, not each individual. I think the message, the information, lived through the cycles, and they passed that down. And that's why they're so accurate.
Let's go to Janet in Scranton, Pennsylvania next. Hi, Janet, go ahead.
Hi. Just quickly, for the woman who called asking about whether charged particles could cause sleep loss and restlessness, you should read the book The Ion Effect. A lot of research on that out of Israel. Okay, my question was, and Mitch, I don't know if you would know the answer. Maybe you could refer me to a reference to learn about it. But I'm wondering, with the pole shift or the weakening change of the magnetic field, whether that may or is already changing essentially our northern hemisphere north of the equator jet stream that zooms around the planet, which is totally separate from the one that zooms around the southern hemisphere, if the magnetic weakening or the pole shift could change the actual jet streams.
I think that all goes hand in hand. I think it's actually kind of the reverse. I think we'll see the shifting ocean and jet streams now, actually, and they'll escalate as time goes on, as precursors to a magnetic shift. Absolutely.
And where could I read about that? I mean, if I really want to see if it's happening now, or,
you know, I would say go to my site. There's very few people that present the data that I have. I mean, this is I zoom in. Earthchangesmedia.com, you'll just see tons of information there. And, of course, all this is going in my third book. Some of this related to ocean and jet stream currents is in my first two books, either one. And you can get those either through Amazon or I have them, you can get it through the website.
What is it about Earth Changes, Mitch, that has gotten you so excited over the years?
The accuracy. Of course, my research, and I just kind of pinch myself from time to time. How could I have, how could nobody have been capable of putting NASA and NOAA together to get information? It's hard for me to conceive, but evidently they hadn't for whatever reason, and I did. That's why some people call me the Bob Woodward of the science community. You know, Bob Woodward, I think most of us know him.
Watergate,
absolutely. He's never held a political position, never. But I don't know a person who knows more about politics than he does. So that's kind of me. I've never worked for NASA, NOAA, or any of the scientific agencies, but I know a lot of them. And I go right to them, and I mean the head of the department. And that's how I do my research and get it all down, and then present it. I think perhaps in part, maybe less so now, because I went to all the agencies and gathered the information and brought it together. That's what's made my journey unique, and it's been extremely exciting. And when I do my research, and which also includes ancient texts, very much so, and then NASA starts publishing new research findings that correlate almost exactly what I have been hypothesizing. It's very exciting. It's like, score!
Hey, Mitch, can people still get your older books?
Sure. Either way, through Amazon or go to the Earth Changes Media .com website, and there's an order form there. Click on subscriptions, I think, on the home page, or there's a banner. I think I have a rotating banner on the front, and I have a newsletter. My wife will kill me. I always forget to announce it. I have a newsletter that I send out that will bring to you right into your home. The latest breaking news. Very often before anybody else.
How do we get that? From your website?
Yeah, there's a on the left column, there's a up towards the top, a little place there that...
All right, well, we shall find it. Earthchangesmedia.com. Back in a moment, Confessions of a Regressionist.